Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the result presentation for the fourth quarter at CIE Automotive. After the presentation, there will be a Q&A session. I'd like to remind you that to ask a question, you should do so by writing through the tool provided on the webcast. Now I'll hand over to Ms. Aristizabal. Go ahead, please.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the results conference for the fourth quarter at CIE Automotive. With this conference, we bring 2020 to an end at last, this coronavirus year that has raised our health and our economy, and which, of course, has also left a mark on the automotive sector, an industry that left along the road in a single year 15 million vehicles, 16% of its 2019 production, going back to production levels of  2010. We've seen an impact on all our markets without exception, although it's true that this impact has had a different intensity in each one, associated in part to their capacity to control the pandemic. On the one hand, we have the most favorable case, China, which after Q1 in the red has set a V and has only lost barely 1 million vehicles in the year, a drop of only 4%. We have intermediate cases in regions like North America and Europe with drops in activity that were highly concentrated in the second quarter, with losses of 3 and 4 million vehicles, which in the year represented a drop of 20 and 22% respectively. And we have the most negative case of emerging economies like India and Brazil, where the impact was significant both in the second and in the third quarters. On the one hand, we have India, which has partially recovered the year with an outstanding fourth quarter and has closed 2020 with a minus 23%, losing 1 million vehicles. And on the other hand, Brazil, the market with the greatest impact, with a flat fourth quarter, has dropped 32% in the year and has lost another million vehicles. But not everything has been negative for the industry in 2020. In a more or less agile way and with more or less success, many governments have launched specific sectoral incentives that have slightly softened the drops and in general have had a clear bias towards electrification, which has been obvious in the vehicles mix in 2020 with a 3% of electric vehicle share. And this is where our technological diversification is very important and has enabled us to respond to this dynamic demand of our customers as it evolves. And of course, not all OEMs have felt the same impact. Their key markets, their agility towards the end customer, the motor mix in their portfolio, their strategy to avoid regulatory fines, all have been critical factors in a year which has left significant variations in their market shares, as shown by the fact that Toyota has recovered the podium as world leader, taking it away from Volkswagen after 4 years as number one. Thus, the importance of our commercial diversification. We serve everyone, but we don't depend on the performance of any of them. And after this quick review of the market, we are going to deep dive during the Q&A on as many markets as you like, but we're going to move on now to the results. In the fourth quarter, we've recovered normal activity levels, and the income statement has shown the best fourth quarter in the history of CIE, a record quarter in spite of the pandemic and the strong negative impact of the exchange rate, which has drained millions of euros in sales. You saw minus 50 million euros in the presentation and also in the earnings. But even so, we have met our commitment for the third quarter. And in the fourth quarter, we have consolidated and, in fact, even improved the pre-COVID margins. The quarterly EBITDA margin over sales of 16.7% exceeds the 16.1% in the fourth quarter of 2019, and not just for the total group, but in every geographic area. We have closed the year 2020 with an EBITDA margin of 15%, and we remind you that this is a little more than 100 points below the post-acquisition diluted EBITDA of 16%, which was our starting point for the year 2020, a great achievement. 185 million euros in net profit in the worst year in the history of our industry, in which the fall in our production levels has been of more than 20%. A year where there have been no magic recipes, but there have been a number of elements which we feel are absolutely key when it comes to taking measures, and I'd like to highlight three. The first of all, a great deal of agility when it comes to reacting. This is what enables us to have a very lean model. Secondly, the application of the lessons learned, especially learned during the 2009 crisis, among others, how crucial it is to be flexible in the headcount in order to face up to volume loss situations. And we were starting with 20% part-time workers at the end of 2019. Also, the importance of austerity in fixed costs. We started with fixed costs below 9% over sales at the end of 2019. And other aspects such as strict control of the investment in working capital. And the third element is common sense. Common sense that was translated into a very agile deployment of the COVID-19 action plan that we've discussed during previous quarters. So we're talking about three factors, combining speed, a solid business model, and a specific action plan, which is what has enabled us to obtain this margin recovery in record time. And we have surpassed a dramatic 2020 with honors. I'll now discuss main elements in our debt variation. CapEx, which grew to 158 million euros, 30% less than 2019. As we also mentioned during previous quarters, our investment philosophy in this complicated year 2020 has been that of containing and reducing CapEx to the necessary minimum, but always respecting two elements. On the one hand, the necessary maintenance, to which we have dedicated 85 million euros, and on the other hand, undertaking the growth CapEx undertaken with our customers for the supply of contract projects, to which we have dedicated 73 million. Examples of this expansion CapEx we could mention are new CIE plants at CIE Plásticos Mexico, Aurangabad in India, the new automatic liquid paint line at the Metal Diadema in Brazil, or the purchase of a new press at CIE Egaña here in the Basque Country. The second element to be highlighted, the operating working capital. We said at the results conference for the third quarter that the working capital management during that quarter had not been optimum. The strong activity recovery ramp hadn't allowed it, and we said that we expected to make up for it in the fourth quarter, and this is what has finally happened. With many ups and downs, with extraordinary investment quarters like the second quarter or other quarters with a strong generation as the fourth quarter, but the annual variation in operating working capital has been close to normal. And a result of all this, we've seen in the fourth quarter an operating cash flow of 89 million euros, which implies an EBITDA conversion ratio of more than 60%, as we saw in the third quarter. In other words, we are also at normalized levels. Bearing in mind that in this fourth quarter, there have been no dividends, there have been no M&A payments, and practically no payouts in the share buyback program that ended in October, the total cash flow has been dedicating to deleveraging the balance sheet as we promised. So the net financial debt closed at 1.595 billion euros, which implies a reduction of more than 10% in just one quarter. It's important to highlight that this net financial debt of 1.595 includes somewhat more than 300 million euros from what we can call corporate operations. On the one hand, 114 million euros in payments related to acquisitions, buying some machinery, the payment pending for CIE Goldie and the acquisition of an additional 4% in our Indian subsidiary, MCIE. And on the other hand, 190 million euros for remuneration to the shareholder through dividends and through the buyback of own shares to reduce capital. If we just discounted the payments related to acquisitions, the net financial debt, let me call it the organic debt, would have been reduced by 40 million compared to the closing of 2019. And if we deduct the total of 300 million in corporate operations, the, let me call it purely operational net financial debt would have been reduced by more than 230 million and would be 15% less than in 2019. What does this prove? The solid operating cash recurrent generation base for the CIE business. I'm going to leave 2020 behind and now look at the future at today. And I imagine the first thing that comes to mind are certain uncertainties over our industry that are both general, like the new restrictions and lockdowns implemented in several countries, as well as other sectorial uncertainties, for example, the shortage of semiconductors. At CIE, we believe that these are junctural elements, and we do not expect them to damage the global picture for 2021 with a strong recovery. In 2021, we expect the automotive market to grow by more than 13%, with a return of around 10 of the 15 million vehicles lost in 2020. How is this growth distributed? It is expected that the markets that have suffered most in 2020 will have the biggest rebound in 2021. The cases of India and Brazil, with an estimated growth of 23% in India and 32% in Brazil, which would leave them at the gates of recovering the pre-COVID 2019 volumes. If we look at China, for 2021, we expect a growth of 6% and believe that a more effective management of the pandemic combined with a strong stimuli program is behind this positive pattern in production development. We estimate that Europe will grow 15% and North America 24%. The main reason for this difference between the two is the inventory level in both geographies. Inventories in Europe ended 2020 at similar levels to their historical average, while in North America, inventories are at a historic low, while demand continues to be strong. This combination favors a growth in production to build up inventories. This is the context for 2021. And in this context, we have launched our forecast for 2021. On the one hand, in sales, in line with market growth. On the other hand, we're talking about margins. We're talking about more than 17%. We've said several times that our post-COVID margin goal went through two different phases. A first phase where we recovered the pre-COVID margins, something that we already achieved in the third quarter and which we have consolidated in the fourth quarter, and a second phase where we go back to expanding margins. Well, we're starting with phase two, expanding margins, with the goal of reaching in 2021 an EBITDA margin over sales of more than 17%. This expansion in margins will be motivated by three fundamental levers. One is external, the leverage, operational leverage from the return in volume, and two internal levers, the optimization of the organic perimeter margins at CIE and the improvement of the inorganic perimeter margins acquired in 2019, which still have potential to grow. Regarding operating cash flow, we consider that the conversion rates of 60% of EBITDA into operating cash, which you've already seen in 2020, are recurrent and completely sustainable. And regarding net financial debt, the sum of all the above, more volume, better margins, high EBITDA conversion into operating cash, all this is going to mean a major deleveraging for this 2021 that will put us at around 2.5 times net financial debt over EBITDA. So we've been talking first about 2020, then 2021, and now, if I may, I would like to look a little bit into the future, into the midterm, a future where we expect emerging markets like India and Brazil to be the fastest to grow, gaining specific weight in the global automotive market. On the other hand, we will see mature markets like North America and Europe that will not recover their peak volumes of 2016 and 2017. We believe that in the midterm, the automotive industry will come out of this crisis reinforced. On the one hand, there will have been a reduction, at least partially, in the overcapacity of the sector. We believe that there will be a concentration, fewer major players, with more market share and with greater resilience to face future crises. We also believe that there will be strategic collaboration. This crisis has put the focus on the need to maintain a healthy financial situation that can put up with unexpected blows, which implies alliances that rationalize major investments that couldn't be carried out in other environments. This is what we see at CIE, and we want to end this presentation by saying that in this future scenario, we feel we are in a perfect position to continue on the profitable growth path that we have been proving for years. And we will now move on to your questions, and thank you all very much. The first question is about the prospects for Brazil and the closing of Ford, as well as whether there are impairment provisions to cover this impact. Brazil. Well, the market context, let me start with the market side and then I'll move to Ford. As I said earlier, this is our market with the biggest impact, with more than a 30% drop in production. At the end of the year, we've seen the launching of new models that have helped in the last quarter. This is a good sign, and a positive sign also the low interest rates at historical lows since the month of August practically. It's true that there are other macro factors that don't help, such as high levels of unemployment or the dependence on Argentina. Remember that Brazil normally exports between 20 to 25% of its vehicles, and half of that goes to Argentina. So this is a factor to be considered. Regarding inventories, what is the inventory situation there? Well, they went from the peak of 100 days inventory in the second quarter. In the third quarter, they were normalized down to 20. In the fourth quarter, it's been even less, 17 days. In January, we saw 18 days. So they're still low. And this is another positive element. This, as the context for the minus 32 last year, and the recovery of 22% in 2021. And this was related to the question about the closing of Ford. It's not a surprise. It hasn't been a surprise in the sector. Ford in 2018 launched a global restructuring plan that affected above all Europe, China, and South America, the regions where they said they had the biggest losses. And it was an $11 billion plan. In 2019, they had closed the San Bernardo do Campo plant in Sao Paulo. And the context is also that Ford has lost market share in recent years. 5 years ago, they had a 12% market share in Brazil, and they're down to 6 point something in 2020. They've lost a share to other players like Volkswagen and Fiat that are doing a great job in the Brazilian market. So after closing in 2019, the Bernardo do Campo plant, in 2020 they announced the shutdown of the three plants that were left in Brazil, Camaçari, Taubaté and Horizonte, and proposed a quick shutdown of the first two and Belo Horizonte in the fourth quarter. They're saying that of the $11 billion of the total plan, this is going to take $4 billion. How do we see it regarding CIE Automotive? The worst case, the worst case would be the loss of approximately 1% of global CIE sales. Ford is a customer of ours, but not the most important. And bear in mind that in 2021, the impact will only be partial of some months, and the impact will come in 2022. And I say the worst case, because in fact, the feeling we all have in the sector is that Ford will lose some market share, and it will be picked up by others, as occurred in the past. Volkswagen, Fiat, General Motors will pick up that market share left by Ford. And those customers are among our top customers in Brazil. So we wouldn't lose all the sales, and we believe that this is a more than likely scenario. So likely scenario of the Ford impact, the worst case would be that 1% of global sales for 2022. But a more likely scenario is a much smaller worst case that would end up being not very significant for CIE. The next question is, in the short term, how will we be affected by the shortage of semiconductors? Are the customers still demanding production and building up stock, or are they ordering fewer parts? Well, regarding semiconductors, a lot has been written about it. I think we've all read a lot, the information published in the press and the information we're receiving from our customers points to the fact that the impact of this bottleneck is going to be felt basically in the first quarter and some in the second. But we all expect, I think there's a consensus, that most of it will be offset in the second half of the year and won't have a significant impact on the snapshot for the full year. Regarding the dimension of the problem, the latest quantification we've seen, recopilation, because some customers give quantifications like Volkswagen, but others don't. But the latest quantification we've seen has been from IHS. We're talking about almost a million unit effect. 40% is China, remember. 25% is North America, and Europe is less than 20%. And it's not the same in all geographies, and it's not the same for all OEMs. OEMs like Volkswagen, Daimler, Fiat are more affected, and customers like BMW or PSA are less affected. They've said it themselves. Today, in our case, referring to CIE, we haven't seen a significant impact on our sales so far. We are waiting for our customers to quantify possible production adjustments for the coming weeks that could have some impact on the March sales. But in any case, I'm going to be very negative. I'm going to go to the worst case again, which is what you like in these mathematical exercises. Let's say that half of these volumes aren't recovered. Well, we've been saying that in 2021, instead of going from 74.6... we would be at 84 million vehicles, and that 13% growth would stay at that level of 13%. So it doesn't seem dramatic in the global snapshot. And then bear in mind that in the first quarter of 2021, for which around 20 million vehicles are expected, is always going to be better than in the first quarter of 2020, which was less than 18 million, because the comparison base is low. So it's something that's on the table that we're monitoring, but it doesn't seem that it's going to have a significant impact. The next question, to what extent do we expect the transition to the electric vehicle affecting the cyclic recovery of markets in general? Is it in an accelerator because of the subsidy, or will it de-accelerate because it increases uncertainty for consumers? Well, I'll take several things from the question. One related to subsidies. I was saying that most of the subsidies to support the sectors we've seen during 2020 have had a clear bias towards electrification. I'd like to put the data you're reading for 2020 on electrification in context. In 2020, bear in mind that electric vehicles, in most cases, we're talking about vehicles with a price over the market average. Let me say that it's a somewhat premium niche, and the premium niche always has a greater resilience than other lower segments. So that first. Secondly, you add to that the fact that subsidies have been aimed at electric vehicles. And especially in Europe, there's a third factor, which is the fact that many OEMs in the month of December, during the whole last quarter, but especially during the month of December, they have self-registered many electric vehicles in order to avoid regulatory fines. So I'll give you a couple of figures. In December, of the total electric vehicles, or of the total vehicles sold in the month of December, 46% of the Daimler vehicles are electric, while in the total for the year, the percentage is much lower, and the same goes for others. So everything you read about 2020, please let's put it in the context of the year it is. From there, electrification. Well, three general comments. One, we have to consider that the rate of electrification is completely different by geographies. We have more electrification expected in China, obviously, in Europe, obviously, somewhat less in North America, but hardly any in the rest. And this allows for a gradual evolution. I know that we all like to do the mathematical exercise of what percentage of sales would fall if they were all electric. But this isn't happening. The evolution in the various geographies in a very gradual way is very helpful. On the other hand, we have hybridization. Hybridization is the natural path towards electrification and is going to be the dominant powertrain in the coming years. This is an internal combustion engine plus an electric motor. And this brings us back to the concept of a gradual evolution. It's not overnight. And thirdly, we're still seeing a diversity of midterm prognosis. We're reading reports that talk about electrification in 25 or 30, and there's an enormous range. And what that reflects is the enormous uncertainty, the cost of the batteries, the cost of the car, the charging infrastructure, etc. This as a general context, and focusing on fear and how this context affects us, I think it's extremely important to remember that more than 80% of Sia's portfolio can be used on any vehicle. More than 80% of the CA portfolio can be used on any vehicle regardless of its engine, a percentage which in 2017 was less than 75 and now it's more than 80. So we're evolving. Electrification in the end is a natural process in the evolution of our customers' demand. 5 years ago, it was 1% of our sales. Now it's close to 4% of our sales. And why? Because there's more demand from the customers, therefore a greater penetration of the electric vehicle in our pie. We feel very well positioned, both from the commercial point of view, bearing in mind that we are working with traditional customers like Renault, Volkswagen, Nissan in the electric area, but also the new players, Tesla or Rivian. And from the point of view of product strategy, I think that we are exactly as well positioned in the future for a battery engine or electronics for the electric vehicle. We are where we need to be. We need an increase in demand for this to pick up more volume. The series are currently very short. And when I say that we're well positioned, it's because we feel that not everyone is as well positioned. So this is a magnificent opportunity for us, and we're already seeing this in the projects we're picking up. The next question is about the forecast for the truck market in Europe in 2021. Well, talking about trucks, as the question says, it's very much focused on Europe. You know that our highest exposure is in the German truck market. So we saw 2020 in Europe that has dropped by 17% and has recovered a significant part in 2021. In Europe, we're talking about plus 11% in the recovery of truck volumes. But if I focus on Germany, which I think is the market that represents us most and the data that best represents us, 2020 dropped more. It dropped by 24%, more than the European average. And for 2021, It's expected a little bit more recovery than the European average. Instead of that 11% recovery in Europe, we're expecting an 18% growth. And a qualitative aspect, all the truck mileage indicators say that they are back to pre-COVID levels from January. And this is an indication for more truck purchases. So even if we don't recover everything that was lost in 2020, at least a good part of the volume will be recovered. The next question is about the level of utilization of our plants in 2020 and how we see it in 2021. Well, we were saying that our production has dropped by around 20% compared to normalized levels. So we are talking about 70-odd percent of utilized capacity in 2020. For 2021, and with the expected growth, with that growth guidance we've given you, we'd be occupying a significant part. You know that when we talk about production and utilized capacity, we never talk about 100%. That's impossible. But that's 70-odd, 80% utilized capacity in 2020. Well, will be filled to a significant degree during 2021. The next question is about the drop in margins in Europe versus Q3. We're talking about the European side or the Mahindra SEA? The European part? Well, yes, Mahindra SEA. Well, we're talking about a mini drop. We're talking about a market which for Europe and with all the lockdowns and with everything that's happened in the last quarter, including the end of the quarter with the semiconductor issue, there has been a mini adjustment in margins. I don't think it's significant. And in fact, it's one of the areas with the biggest potential for 2021. You're going to see a significant expansion in margins. So I would say that it's just an anecdote, and I wouldn't say it's important. We're thinking about the consolidation of the margin we had between the second and third quarter and the margin expansion that Europe is going to have in 2021. That's the message. How are the margins of each perimeter in this fourth quarter and in 2020 versus 2019? What can we expect in the future? How far can they go? Well, in 2021, they're going to go to more than 17%. Let's start there. We come from 2020, where the third and fourth quarters recovered those pre-COVID margins. But remember a comment we made in the third quarter, and which can be applied again to the fourth quarter, and which speaks to these growth levers to expand margins in the future. 16-point-some percent we've had in the third quarter and the fourth quarter is made up, if you want to look at it through the old and new organic perimeters, is made up of an organic perimeter that still has to go to it back to its peak margins. We still have additional efficiencies in our hands to continue to optimize that perimeter. And then we have all the new perimeter, the acquisitions in 2019 and in January 2020, where we still have a long way to go. So what's the margin expansion going to be in all geographies related to each one of those organic and inorganic perimeters? The good thing about it is that apart from the operational deleveraging, which is an external factor, the rest we consider to be internal factors, and this is the best of good news. How far can they go? Again, we started with more than 17% in 2021, and we'll talk about what happens from there on, but you know how ambitious we are, so nobody should think that that's where it's going to stop. See, Goldie, do we have a long way to go to complete the integration process and attain the CIE standards, or have they already been attained? Well, I don't know where that question comes from, but we're ambitious, but we don't do magic. CIE Goldie was integrated in mid-2019. We had a second half of 2019 that was very much focused on establishing the basis on what the action plan was going to be. And when in 2020 we started to work on the action plan, COVID came along. So it hasn't been a wasted year because the old margins below 9% are already at double-digit EBITDA figures, but there's still a long way to go. And, of course, the work hasn't been done, and there are still many quarters of gradual improvement ahead. That's the good news. And I'll say it again, it's one of the great growth levers for the margins. The next question is about 2021, a performance in line with the market, and they say that this would represent a slowdown regarding the historical figures for the company. Why this smaller relative growth? Well, I'm going to make a nuance about the question, because this historical outperformance at FIA, well, FIA has historical overperformance at certain times and underperformance at other times. When the market has a big expansion, it's true that we use the market as a lever and grow a great deal. But when the market is tense, when there are complicated market conditions, that's when the first thing customers do is to come to the supplier to adjust the price. And I don't want to repeat myself, but you know about our commercial policy, and you know we're very selective in our projects. We've been saying it for 25 years, we will always make profitability prevail over volume. How are you facing 2021? We're facing it in a situation of complete stress in the sector. The fact that we're seeing a positive growth of more than 13% for the year doesn't mean that the sector is in a magnificent situation. It means that it's recovering part of the lost volume. But the situation of our customers is complicated. They don't yet have the pre-COVID volumes of 2019. Neither do they have the peak volumes of 2017. They have a lot of open fronts that they have to invest in. Electrification, hybridization, they have to avoid regulatory fines, etc. So one of the quickest and most immediate ways out are the suppliers, as I said. And in this context, we're very selective. And a priori, that could even make us consider a certain underperformance. And I say a priori because there's a positive element that we have a lot of faith in that could offset that to a large extent, and that is that not everyone is going to survive this crisis. Today, you're seeing a sector that is completely doped with all the loans that have been provided by institutions, aid, subsidies, soft loans, government loans, etc. This is what we're seeing. The sector is doped with all this, but the time will come this aid will mature, and then we'll see the true situation of the market, and we'll see the real situation of many players, and we'll find that some of these players are not going to be able to survive. I think I mentioned this in the presentation when I said that we believe that the post-crisis sector is going to be a more concentrated sector and with less overcapacity. This is the context. And going back to growth in 2021, on the one hand, we have the market reference as a negative element. We have that price pressure, the biggest in the 25 years of the history of fear, according to our commercial people. And on the other hand, we have a positive factor, such as the volume recovery, which right now is with other players and which could come to us. This is the global context for this guidance. We are asked whether we have any comment on the potential aspect of the aid related to the European Fund, when there's any guidance on this. As far as we know, in the sector, we specifically at Ternalto, the Association of Spanish Car Components, there have been a number of driver projects put to the Ministry of Industry to try to find those areas where we believe that we can work in. But no, we don't have an answer yet as to what projects are going to be approved and what projects aren't. In what way, what the exact participation is going to be, the amount. But it's not just us. If I remember correctly, It was presented in the last week of January and the final version in February. So it's a little bit preliminary. We'll have news in the future and we'll let you know about it. We're asked to elaborate on the Mahindra CEO restructuring process mentioned in the results presentation. Well, as the question says, this was mentioned in the Mahindra CEO results presentation that we invited you to attend. It's on the website. But I think they referred to the strategy. They spoke about what the strategy was both during 2020 and in the future. And they covered absolutely key issues such as slightly increasing exports from India, which would make us a more profitable, a more competitive company, and many others are doing it in India. They spoke about the electrification strategy along the same lines as Thea. So I think that this is what they're referring to, the strategy that were mentioned, and I can mention others. They spoke about trying to diversify customers on the Indian side, about getting involved in more added value products, hand in hand with the rest of the support of FIA, et cetera, et cetera. It's a presentation, again, that's available on the website. You can look at the details. These are the main lines behind the future strategy followed by Mahindra FIA. They ask whether North America is benefiting from a significant base in Mexico. If North America is benefiting for a more significant improvement in Mexico, a more significant improvement in Mexico. Well, it's true that we've seen a 2020 that's been dropping in both markets, but it's been very similar. It hasn't been more significant, the drop in one or another. In 2020, the complete NAFTA was approximately 20, and the Mexican and U.S. market had a similar drop. It's true that the recovery of the American market, the United States, looks a little bit stronger than production in Mexico, but it has to do with an element I already mentioned, the element of the inventory in the U.S. They're very low. We have a very good combination between low inventory and a very strong demand in the U.S., which means that there will be more leverage in production. So the United States, as an independent market, we're seeing it a little bit stronger in production than Mexico for the year 2021. The potential impact resulting from the recent increase in raw materials in working capital, nothing significant, because something that's basic as a tier two, you know that we've automated the raw material indexing, which is passed on to our customer. It's true that it's not absolutely immediate in all cases. In fact, most contracts have a three-month indexing period, so there could be a time, a quarter compared to another, where it might be felt a little bit, but nothing significant. So no, there's no impact. There hasn't been during the second half of 2020, where there was an extremely strong increase in the price of raw materials, and we're not going to see it again in 2021. We're told that we've said that we expect a reinforced and more consolidated industry after the crisis. How do we see ourselves in M&A? What are the opportunities? Do we have financial capacity? I think that our role is to find the right time. The right time is not to rush for two reasons. Let's start with the most obvious one, because we would like to deleverage the company first. But secondly, because it's not yet the time. Again, I insist, we have a sector that's stoked. We have a sector that has subsidies, aid, etc. We're not seeing the reality of our sector. When in a few months' time or in a few quarters' time, we see the maturing for the return of that aid, we're going to see what the reality is. And that reality is going to be very hard. Many players are going to fall. And this is what I was saying. There are going to be fewer players that are more concentrated and stronger. That includes Thea. I'm raising my hand. That's our role there. And it's been our role for 25 years in the sector, to be the concentrator, the consolidator. And regarding M&A, we have a very nice combination. On the one hand, we won't go into wait because we want to deleverage, but on the other hand, we want to rush. We don't want to rush in and be the first to concentrate when the first opportunity is on the table. We have to be more selective than that, and we have to look at the reality of the sector. So we just have to stay calm. We're asked if we can repeat the growth forecasts by markets for 2021 in Europe and United States. In 2021 in United States and Mexico, the total NAFTA, if I'm not mistaken, is going to grow in 2021 by 25%. But Mexico will be growing close to 20%, and the United States will be growing significantly more, 20%. And this has to do with those volumes, which I mentioned, that are going to be stronger in the United States because of the low inventory level and forecast in Europe. Forecast in Europe for trucks. Oh, forecast in Europe. Just forecast in Europe for 2021. It was on the slides we showed, and they refer to plus 15%. I mentioned plus 15% in Europe, and plus 25% in the United States, with the difference of two mature markets, where Europe ended with normalized inventory levels, while the U.S. ended up with low inventory levels. CapEx, depreciation and working capital for 2021, all at the same time. CapEx, depreciation and working capital. Well, I'll start with CapEx. You've seen a CapEx, which, as we said earlier, was 158 million euros, 30%, I'll repeat it, 30% less than 2019. A very contained CapEx, therefore. And a CapEx that has had two parts, the maintenance side, with 3% over sales, and the rest up to 5.5%, the growth side. It's true that this maintenance, 3%, some of you have asked about it. It hasn't been the historical 4%. It's true that 2020 has been a very atypical year, and in a year like this, no percentage can be directly taken as recurrent. But having said this, it's true that in recent quarters, not just in 2020, we started to see a trend that you're also going to see in the future. The trend that the maintenance CapEx as a percentage over sales has dropped a little, and will probably not reach the historical 4% figure. There have been several factors. On the one hand, we have the integration of CIE and Goldin. The roof system business is less CapEx intensive than the rest of Athea. We have a dynamic, a system of less activation and taking more maintenance costs to the income statement. The investment at Mahindra Thea Europe, for example, is more limited, and this takes us to a recurrent maintenance CapEx that isn't going to return to that historical figure of 4%. The level now will be more around 3.5%. This 3.5% CapEx, bear in mind that we always have to add the expansion CapEx, that expansion CapEx that is so different depending on each time in the project. But since you're asking about the future, I would say that in general, we can estimate between 2-2.5% over sales, additional to the 3.5 maintenance for the next couple of years. This with regard to CapEx. What else was there? Oh, yes, working capital. Well, there's been a very significant improvement in working capital in the first quarter. You've seen it. That improvement in working capital has been 140 million. 35 of them are associated to factoring. A working capital, I said it during the presentation, but I'll say it again. During the third quarter, let's say that we didn't do all our homework, or we didn't do them as well as we expected. So we promised to do double the homework in the fourth quarter, and this reflects what you've seen. So what can we expect for 2021? I would say that nothing specially significant. You know that our general working capital policy is to continue to grow without a significant investment in working capital. I think that this is the biggest guidance I can give you. As an example, you have the working capital we've had in previous years. I don't know, last year, 50 million in generation, and the year before, 20 in generation. So we're talking about small investments or small generations in a working capital that's already highly optimized. I don't know if I'm forgetting something. Depreciation. Okay. And depreciation, around 150 million euros this year. In absolute value, we can expect a small growth in the future that will be recovered in percentage through increases in sales. Nothing special. In other words, nothing to highlight. There won't be a very big increase or decrease. Tax rate and cash flow and IFRS 16 for 2021. IFRS 16, you have it in the broken down annual accounts. It's not significant at all for us. In total assets of 5 billion, the liability because of IFRS started being, I think, 100 million, but right now the impact is around 80. So the IFRS impact is not significant. And what was the other one? The tax rate. For several years, we've been talking about a sort of guidance of approximately 20% in flow. But the fact is that in flow, and not in income statement, in flow, we're a little bit below that. But in any case, to be cautious, I would maintain that 20% tax rate that we've been talking about in recent years. If we can lower it, it's because we use our highly detailed tax strategy, geography by geography, trying to use all kinds of incentives in each one of them. And that is what is helping us to scratch a little bit of that 20% guidance. Considering that interest rates will go up at some point or another, how do we plan to go about reducing debt to 1 to 1.5? Well, I don't know if we'll ever go down to one-time net financial debt EBITDA. We've always said that our comfort zone, where we can have significant organic and inorganic growth that's profitable, that comfort zone is around 2 times the deleveraging capacity. Well, it's not important. It's extremely important. The fourth quarter of this year has shown how debt has gone down by 11% in a single quarter by not carrying out corporate operations. So the deleveraging capacity is extremely important. And with this guidance we're given for 2021 of 2.5, I think it's absolutely obvious that in a very short time, we're going to be able to go back to our comfort zone. They ask whether we're starting to have a demand from customers on products from green resources. Production of components from green resources. I'm not sure I exactly understand the sentence, but I'm going to associate that to emission reduction, to electrification, to hybridization. Without a doubt, we're having a growing component in the demand for that. As an example, I said that in our sales pie, we've gone from 1% to almost 4% sales for electric vehicles in barely 5 years. When the end customer demand is there, the demand from our customers will also increase. Bear in mind that our customers, especially in Europe, feel the absolute pressure of taking steps to reduce emissions, etc., etc. So the kind of components they're going to ask for are always going to go along those lines. And if we're talking about other sorts of resources, more generic resources, such as energy, for example, and you have all the information in the annual report, and I'll give you just a couple of headlines, it's nothing new. We've been doing it for a couple of years. 100% of the energy we use in Spain is green energy. This is a must in-house. So everything that has to do with green in our portfolio, in resources and in energy, if that's where the question was aimed at, of course, that's on our table. There's still a roadmap for a capital markets day. Well, I can't confirm that. I can't confirm it. Those of you that are listening know us very well. You know that we're cautious. We've given a guidance for 2021 in the short term because we believe that this is the visibility we're sure about. As we recover visibility, we're the first that want to share with you the good news about the future. So I think it's a matter of keeping connected so that we can talk about it. There are no more questions. Well, thank you all very much for your time and encouragement to everyone in this results presentation season. Ladies and gentlemen, the presentation is over. Thank you very much for attending.